Hi, everyone. I'm Adam Wiener. This is the UroOnc Minute. These are quick updates from the leaders in urologic oncology. We're continuing here at AUA 26 in Washington, D.C. This interview is going to be a part of our series of the practice of urologic oncology. I'm really excited to welcome Dr. David Kanes, Associate Professor of Urology from Lahey Clinic. Thanks so much for coming here.
Thank you for having us.
And I would regard you as one of the thought leaders when it comes to this topic, which is efficiency in the practice of urologic oncology. So how do we encounter our patients? What do we do ahead of time to prepare? And in a world where we got so many sources of technology, I think you've been a real thought leader on this topic.
I appreciate that. You know, it was born out of my own burnout. So it was originally a way for me to save myself. And just to be clear, people hear me talking about this and they think I'm talking about doing 14,000 RVUs a year. That's not what I'm talking
about.
Yeah. I'm not talking about productivity. I'm talking about efficiency. So part of burnout is you're spinning your wheels, expending energy to things that are lower value that are below your license. How amazing is it to spend your day going from one patient encounter to another, having a real detailed conversation, and then moving on to the next great conversation? I've just been able to capture that in my clinic, and it's made me so happy to be a urologist again.
Yes.
That it's just become a mission to try to spread the little tips that have helped me just so that I can help other people.
Absolutely. And I think that's why your social media presence has probably been really helpful for even our audience, whether it's documentation or just kind of dealing with the regular things that we get is an influx of administrative task.
Yeah. You know, the way I frame it in my own mind is I imagine myself as a college student. And I can remember it vividly. I volunteered in the Yale New Haven emergency room.
Oh, yeah. We're both Yaleys, by the way.
There we
yeah,
go.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a connection. So I volunteered in the pediatric ER.
Okay.
And I fell in love with the actual patient interactions. And each of us has a similar story. Something about the patient interaction seemed very worthwhile. And then administrative stuff intrudes on that magical thing. And the job becomes a little bit less, I don't want to say enjoyable, but it becomes harder. And I'm so hopeful right now because of the advent of AI and even non-AI efficiencies that it can protect that great interaction and kind of push aside all the things that were intruding. And if you put those pieces in place, which is not that hard, I don't care if you're in private practice or you're in academic practice, the time where you're with a patient can become the center of what you do again. And and that always feels very meaningful. It's always going to be meaningful. And so that's why this has become my favorite thing to conquer.
And I think that's, you know, to that end, if someone follows you on social media, I'm looking out for these tips on a daily basis practically, but you got a captive audience here. What do you say are the things that you're is front of mind? What are the big priorities right now for the practicing urologist?
Well, front of mind for me right now is one of the things is the concept of shared decision making. So what is shared decision making? It's when the doctor brings the evidence, the patient brings their values, and then together you decide on a path forward. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of an elusive thing, right? It's like chasing the horizon. You see it from far away, and as you get closer, it keeps moving away.
Yes.
But at this meeting, a group at UCSD has published an abstract, a randomized trial comparing patient pre-education to the usual care for prostate cancer. And they're showing that it improves patient preparedness for that prostate cancer conversation.
And you're talking about they're getting an educational material that's tailored by the physician, right?
Yes, it's physician-led education. Uh-huh. Some of it is written, some of it is video-based. The patients in the treatment group, let's say, they all got this content beforehand, and then the other half didn't get anything or the usual care. And they used a validated questionnaire. It's called Preparation for Decision-Making. And they showed that there was a clear improvement. And this may seem obvious, But if you think about it, it can apply to anything in urology beyond prostate cancer.
Yes.
It can apply to gross hematuria. It can apply to stress incontinence. It can apply to most of the things we do. There's a choice. Here are the options. What do you want to do? And it's very hard in a 15-minute time slot.
Yes.
To get through the necessary catching up to speed in order to get to shared decision making. And when a patient comes in and they've got no baseline, it's hard. It's also, you know, a little bit frustrating, and it's okay for us to admit that we don't maybe enjoy starting explanations from scratch.
I think that's one leap that people don't think about quite as much.
Yeah.
We know the Bosniak rating system by heart and the implications of it. Do we get a lot of fulfillment from explaining it 100 times a day?
Maybe not.
Probably not.
Yeah. And moreover, like, where is it written that we have to do that?
Yes.
What I love is getting to the part where I'm talking to an 84-year-old woman with a Bosniak 3 cyst, and we're looking at her MRI together.
Yes.
And she says, oh, is that a septum? And you know, it puts a smile on my face.
Yes.
And here we are talking, and I'm explaining why I'm not really worried about it. And I don't want her to worry about it until the MRI I'm getting in a year. But then I have time to ask her about her kids and
yes.
family. And
yes.
what she did when she was younger. And I feel like the best version of myself, you know, when I have those conversations. And that's when I feel like I'm being the doctor that I set out to be in the first place. So these tools can be put in place. Patient pre-education. Now we know from a randomized trial that it works, but it was common sense anyway.
Yes.
We can maybe layer on an ambient scribe so that I don't have to worry about documenting. I'm not mentally budgeting, oh, I better cut this visit short so that I can go into my office and type the note.
Constantly, right?
I can spend some time with the patient and you know, so much of doctoring is making a human connection. That's why, by the way, I don't think AI is going to replace us ever. But
longer conversation. Agree, yes.
But, you know, that's when I feel like the college student who, you know, fell in love with this job. And if a medical aspiring medical student caught me 5 years ago, they would have gotten a very pessimistic Dave Kane saying, you know, are you sure you want to do this for a living? Now the undergrads who go through my clinic, I'm much more optimistic and upbeat. This is a great profession. It's always going to be a great profession. But be deliberate about putting systems in place, because we fall to the level of our systems.
Yes.
Put the systems in place.
Yes.
It takes a little bit of effort, but it pays off for future you. And you're good.
I think that's a really great way of putting it too. Yeah. I know, you know, I'm only a year and a half into practice. And when I started, I was inspired by a lot of the tips you gave about the electronic health records.
Yeah.
You get a lot of tips on Epic specifically.
Yeah.
And I wrote a little note to myself that every week I would spend at least 30 minutes to 60 minutes improving my dot phrases or whatever. AI then came in and that helped ChatGPT and make those better. But shortcuts, things like that, that you had recs on. And I thought to myself, yep, this is an investment. It's going to be annoying to have to do this. Yeah. But I saw your vision. Right. And I saw how long, I mean, for the long term,
right.
I'm not here to type the same thing a million times.
Yeah.
I want to be able to slow down. I always ask my patients what their job is and usually get couple of questions from there. That's my personal touch. And I think we all get fulfillment and a little less burnout from there.
That's a part of the job I love too. I'm always asking about what they do for a living. And then I'd much rather talk about that with them for 20 minutes. And then I jokingly say, okay, now we have to talk about your prostate.
Yes.
But what good system in any aspect of our lives didn't take some hard work to put in place? As you say, it's an investment.
Yes.
So, you know, if you're out there in practice and you find yourself complaining about your clinic and you're running behind and you're not enjoying it, but what have you done to try to fix it? You've got to put in some time. Most employers have a guru on the EHR side that will meet with you for an hour to help you optimize things.
Yes.
That hour pays itself in dividends for the rest of your, like for the next 5 to 10 years.
I think this gets at another great point that comes across in a lot of your writings, which is that, you know, we have a system. It's not going away. To complain about it, it's just going to eat up more of your time.
That's right.
You either work with it and make it work for you, or more burnout.
Right. I also just want to plant the seed in viewers' heads that the system is not as broken as we think.
Yeah.
There are people who will listen to you if you want to be the voice for change.
Yes.
So in my health system, I was the canary in the coal mine screaming about AI scribes, and people actually listened.
Yeah.
You know, you got to find the right person, but you're the one doing the billable work. The whole thing doesn't occur without you seeing the patient. So you have a voice.
Yes.
And if you're in a private practice group, speak up, be an advocate for these types of systems that we're talking about.
A wonderful point to take. And look, we like to usually wrap up the show with a little bit about where the experts think things are going. What are you excited about in this area?
You know, I talked about running towards the horizon, and my ideal of being able to just see one patient at a time and not do anything else is kind of like that running to the horizon.
Yeah.
But I really do think that that is not far off.
Yeah.
Right now it's sort of cobbled together. We can make it work. I think in the next 5 to 10 years, it's going to be considered the norm.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'll give you a few more examples. I talked about patient pre-education. I talked about AI scribes. Don't leave your staff behind. That's another piece of the puzzle that I think is going to be increasingly improved. I'll give you an example. I can do a great job of telling my patient who needs an aquablation that they need an enema the morning of. But what if they call and the staff picks up and they have no idea? So staff decision support is going to be coming up. We're well aware of open evidence, which is clinical decision support. But there's this other half, which is the team working for us. I think AI is going to start bringing us all onto the same level.
And yes.
That's what a real high-functioning team is going to look like,
yes,
say, 5 to 10 years from
now. Yeah, to answer some of those low-hanging fruit questions.
Exactly. But
yeah, I can see that. Well, once again, David Kaines, associate professor of urology at Lehigh Hospital, thank you so much.
Thank you for
having me. Thank you for your contributions to this field as well. Very exciting. And thank you for being on the show.
Appreciate it.